So this past week in my class at Mobile Christian, I was asking my 8th graders this question: did Jesus want to die? Did Jesus want to die? And we looked at the passage in Luke where he's in the garden with his disciples and he goes to pray and he asks if there's a way to have this cup, this responsibility taken from him, which to me indicates that Jesus did not pursue pain. He did not seek out suffering. I don't believe that he desired death. But what he desired even more than the pain and the suffering and the torture that was about to come his way, what he desired even more than maybe not having that, was he desired for God's will to be done. He wanted what God wanted more than he wanted what he wanted. And I think just in that alone, there's a lesson for us in that. And that, do we desire what God wants more than we desire the thing that we want? And I'm thankful that Jesus wanted God's will to be done more than anything else, and that he went through the suffering and the pain and the torture that was the death on the cross. And in this class, I brought something in. Wayne Rowe had made me this crown of thorns. It's made out of actual thorns, and it is very, very sharp, like they're real thorns. And so you touch it, and it hurts. And so in the class, I pulled out this crown of thorns, and I had students come up and try the crown of thorns on. So had a couple of kids that were brave enough to do it, and they started to put it on their head. And as soon as it touches your head, guess what? It hurts, right? I think some of them were surprised how badly it hurt. They ended up passing it around. You could see some of them gently putting it on. Some, you know, trying to be tough would quickly put it on, but they realized that was a mistake pretty quickly. Some of them would try to grab it as carefully as they could, and they didn't even want to try it. They just kept passing it on to the next person. But everyone's response and reaction when they started to put it on their head, do you know what their immediate instinct to do once it touched their head was? To take it off as quickly as you could, because it hurts. And I imagine Jesus, and this is just one thing that happened to him at that time, his probably instinct reaction when the crown of thorns touched his head was the same, and that is to take it off. But he didn't. Not because he enjoyed that pain. Not because it was like, oh, this is something that, man, I love doing this. This is so great. He endured that pain and that suffering, like putting a crown of thorns on his head, like being whipped and beaten, like having nails going through his hands and feet. He did that because this was God's will for him. He did that because of his love for us. And that is an awesome thing. And in the moment, we see these disciples, and we've talked about this a little bit already, their reaction to what's going on. And to them, this looked like defeat. This was not what they were anticipating for their king. They did not expect for their king to be wearing a crown of thorns. But what looked like defeat was actually going to turn into victory. And so Jesus dies on the cross, and he is buried in the tomb. And we get this passage in Matthew chapter 28. If you have a Bible, you can flip over there. I'm also going to have the verses up here on the screen. In Matthew chapter 28, starting in verse 1, it says this: after the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. So a few things here. One, Mary and the other Mary, they came to prepare the body. The preparation for the body, it was cut short because Sabbath was happening. And so they weren't able to do all the things they needed to do to honor the dead body of Jesus. And so after the Sabbath, on the first day of the week, on Sunday, they came to the tomb. And what did they expect to find at the tomb? They expected to find the dead body of Jesus and to prepare that body. But before that, there was this violent earthquake. The earth shook, remember, at Jesus' death? It also shook again at his resurrection. I mean, one of the things I think we see there is that even the earth itself was affected and impacted by the resurrection of Jesus. And probably the earth shaking here is in connection to this angel rolling this stone away. And we meet this angel here. This is an interesting angel. And there's a question I want us to think about this morning. The angel rolls the stone away. Why? Why does the angel roll the stone away? Was it because it was to let Jesus out of the tomb? Did Jesus need for the angel to come and roll the stone away so that Jesus could be released from his tomb prison that he was in? What do you think? Did Jesus need the angel to roll the stone away? Well, we know in a place like John chapter 20, verse 19, it tells us that Jesus, in his resurrection body, he could pass through material barriers. There's these locked doors, and he's able to get through these locked doors. So I don't believe that Jesus needed this angel to roll the stone away. The stone being rolled away in the tomb was not for Jesus' benefit. Whose benefit then was it for? It wasn't to let Jesus out. It was to let the women in. It was rolled away to let the women and disciples get in and see for themselves that Jesus had been raised from the dead. And when the women arrived, I mean, there's no possibility of mistake here. They knew what tomb this was. We see a little bit earlier in Matthew 27, verse 60, that this was a brand new tomb. So there was, it's not like there's other dead bodies in there. It's a new tomb. There's no one in there. It's empty when they arrive. The women were also there when he was buried, so they knew exactly where to go to find the tomb that Jesus was at. But he's not there when they get there. And this angel, like, we don't know a lot about, like, his demeanor and how he acts. I know angels are usually frightening in Scripture, but I wonder if this angel is a little bit more playful, right? Maybe he has a big smirk on his face. What's he doing when they arrive? He's sitting on the stone. I just think that's a cool image. Maybe he's smiling because he has this awesome news to share with them, and that is that the tomb is empty. So he's casually sitting on top of the stone when the women arrive. I mean, imagine the grin on his face. And, you know, I don't know who gets this job to be the angel that rolls the stone away. That would be a cool job to have if you're the angel that gets to do that. How exciting to be the angel that gets to let the women know. And here's what he says in this next section here. Russ, I don't know if you mind clicking for me. I'm having trouble clicking the slide. It says this in verse 5. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He is not here. He is risen, just as he said." Like, you remember, he told y'all he was going to do this. Shouldn't be surprised. "He is not here. He is risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he is risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you." He is not here. He is risen. That is awesome news. And I think we're spoiled a little bit in that we hear that news on a regular basis. But to imagine hearing that news for the very first time, that the dead body is not here, he is risen from the dead. For the first time, the followers of Jesus, and it's so neat that it is these faithful women, not the people you'd expect in a situation like this. It's these women who heard what they did not expect to hear. They heard that Jesus was not in the tomb, but had risen from the dead. I was reading some commentary on this, and in Israel and at the Mount of Olives, it describes it this way. It says there's oceans of tombs and graves. But you know whose tomb you won't find there? Jesus, because he is not there. And so the angel reminds these women that they should have expected this. This is just as Jesus said it was going to happen. And now this angel, going back to who this angel is, I wonder if this was one of the angels that Jesus was talking about in Matthew chapter 26. If you remember when he's in the garden at one point, and we talked about this other, it's such a neat story, when the people come to arrest him, the disciples are ready to fight. Peter whips out the sword and he tries to kill someone, it seems like, and slices an ear off instead. And Jesus stops everything and he says this. He says, "Do you think I cannot call on my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels. Do you know how many angels is 12 legions of angels? So a legion could be anywhere from like 3 to 6,000 times 12. If you do the math, it's like over 70,000 angels. Seems like a lot of angels. We don't ever see that many angels together. And so this is this massive group of angels. And I don't think the number itself is important. I think what's important is what Jesus is saying here. If I wanted to, I could call these angels down and they would come and they would put an end to this. I wonder if this angel that's here, was he a part of this group? I mean, the angels are not omniscient. They don't have maybe this full understanding. So it's possible maybe they didn't know the end of what was going to happen here. And you can imagine these angels that are witnessing Jesus being killed on the cross, how angry this made them. They were probably ready to spring into action, ready for Jesus to call them so that they could come and assist and attend to Jesus. But Jesus didn't call them, just like he didn't pull the crown of thorns off his head, just like he didn't stop the nails from going through his hands and feet. I wonder if the angels were disappointed that they didn't get the call. Maybe they thought to themselves, how dare these evil men harm the Son of God? And so maybe this angel was a part of this group. And so he's here, and he rolls this stone away. Now, there's a problem that these women had, and they were aware of this problem. And it's on the next slide here. So in Mark chapter 16, verse 3, before the women come to finish preparing the body, they realize they have this problem. It says they asked each other, who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb? The women weren't just curiosity seekers. They were carrying spices to honor the body of Jesus. And they probably thought to themselves, how in the world are two women going to be able to move this stone? Now, these stones were heavy. A conservative estimate is that the stone might have been 2 tons. And so putting the stone into place to cover the entrance to the tomb, that wouldn't have been that difficult. Probably a couple of people could have done that, because you're pushing it down and there's a groove and the stone goes into the groove to help seal the entrance to the tomb. The difficult part would have been getting the stone out of the groove up an incline. And two women would not have been able to do that, I don't believe. And so they had this realization, like, how are we going to remove the stone? Who's going to roll this stone away? That would have been the hardest part for them to do here. And they could have gotten really discouraged. They could have been like, there's no need for us to go. We're going to get there. The stone's going to be in place. We're not going to be able to accomplish this task. This is this big problem for these women. And they could have let this problem get in the way of them accomplishing what they were trying to do. But they get there. Let me go to the next slide. They get there, and what do they see? The stone is rolled back, and the angel is sitting on top of it. What an awesome sight. Problem solved. What a huge victory. And so my question for you this morning is this. If we can go to the next slide. What is the big stone in your life? Maybe there is some problem that you have, and you don't know how to solve it. And if you go to the next slide for me again, Russ. Just as the angel was on top of this problem for these women, we need to trust that the Lord can be on top of our problems. This past week, we went and took some teenagers to Harding, stayed with my parents, and they've been moving, and they moved into a new house, and they had a box of stuff for me to carry back as they've been cleaning out their old house. And so in this box, I brought it home, and there were some high school yearbooks. So I graduated high school like 15 years ago, which to some of you seems like a short amount of time. Some of you, that's like, whoa, that is a long time. Mainly the teenagers feel that way. And so I was going through some of these yearbooks, and I was looking at what people wrote, notes and things, and looking at some of the pictures. And one of the thoughts that I had was, man, at that time, this was so stressful. Some of these people were big problems for me. Some of this stuff was the biggest deal. I cared so much about what these people thought about me. You know what? Now, 15 years later, I don't really care. Like, all that stuff that seemed so important and seemed like the biggest deal in the world, seemed like huge issues and these gigantic stones, not really that big of a deal. Sometimes perspective like that, as we look back on a problem, can make problems seem smaller. Some problems are like that. But if we're being honest, there are some problems that those stones seem too big, too gigantic, and they are real problems. Maybe it is a broken relationship. Maybe it's something to do with you and your spouse. Maybe it is something with a parent or a child that is this gigantic problem, and it is stressing you out. Like you are having trouble listening right now because you are worried about this problem. It's this gigantic stone. You don't know how to move it. Maybe it's a health issue. Those are real problems that give us anxiety and stress us out, and there are these gigantic stones, and we don't know if we can move them. And you know, sometimes we're going to come to a problem, and that stone's going to be rolled away. Sometimes maybe it doesn't. But one thing I think we can always know is that just as the angel was on top of the problem, is that the Lord is on the top of our problem. And just like maybe looking at that situation and it looked like defeat, we eventually find out with that perspective that no, it was not defeat. It was actually victory. And for us in our problems, these big gigantic stones, sometimes they feel like crushing defeat. But my hope is that at some point we can look back on them and see, you know what? There was actually some victory there. God was on top of it. We don't always have to have all the answers in our lives, just like the women didn't have the answer to removing the stone. But they didn't let uncertainty keep them from doing good works. Next slide. Going on, let's go one more. No, actually, sorry, stay right there. Go back. Thanks. Perfect. All right. In verse 7 and 8, listen again what's said. Then go quickly, tell the disciples, he has risen from the dead, and going ahead of you into Galilee, there you will see him. Now I have told you. So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. The angels give this instruction to the two Marys. Go quickly and tell his disciples, he is risen from the dead. This resurrection had an effect on the women. I mean, that effect was they were going to go tell somebody about it. And to me, it's interesting that the angel says, he's risen from the dead, and he's going ahead of you, and you will see him again. What if the angel had said, hey, he is risen, but he's already ascended to heaven. Take my word for it. He is risen. He's not here. The body's not here, but he's already gone up to heaven. I mean, that's still good news. But the truth of what happened is even better. The women and his disciples got to see him. They weren't just ear witnesses to what happened. They were eyewitnesses to the resurrection of Jesus. And they got to witness the resurrected Lord. And then in verse 9 and 10, suddenly Jesus met them. Greetings. That's what he said, greetings. I mean, I guess he could have been like, I'm back. Like, that would have been weird if he said that. Some translations say instead of hello or greetings, he actually says rejoice. I don't know what you say in a situation like this. Jesus has risen from the dead, and so he says greetings. And they come to him, but their response, I can understand this. They clasped his feet, and they worshiped him. Then Jesus said to them, do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me. The resurrection had this effect, this huge impact on all kinds of things here. Go to the next slide. Here's what the resurrection impacted. It impacted the earth. The earth shook. That's the effect of the resurrection. The angel felt the effect. I mean, you can tell in his demeanor, this is an exciting, awesome thing. The guards, and we skimmed over it briefly, but they were impacted by it. It shook them, right? They ended up telling a lie later about what had happened, but it had an impact on them. And then the women, they felt the effect of the resurrection. And their response here, I think, should be our response. They ran to tell other people about it. They worshiped the risen Lord. And they did what Jesus commanded, which was to go and tell the brothers of Galilee that they will see Jesus again. How does the resurrection affect you? What effect does the resurrection have on you? Maybe, hopefully, it changes the way that you view life's problems. These overwhelming, gigantic, immovable stones. And we can look at these problems, and it can discourage us, and they can see them overwhelming. Or we can decide, you know what? I'm going to do what I need to do. I'm still going to do these good works. God is on top of this problem. Does the resurrection cause you to want to live with a greater purpose? Does the resurrection, like these women, does it call you to fall at the feet of Jesus and worship him? Does the resurrection cause you to want to go and tell others about what Jesus has done for you? The resurrection should cause a response in our lives. And maybe this morning the resurrection causes you to respond by making some kind of change in your life. Maybe it's to obey the good news, to do what Jesus did in a sense, which is to die to ourselves and to be resurrected, to be raised to new life through baptism, and to come out a new creation by what Jesus did for us on the cross. The resurrection must have an impact on you, whether it's the way you view life's problems or the way that you decide to go and tell others about it. How it impacts and changes your life is for us to decide. This morning, if there's something that you need to change, if there's some response you need to have to the resurrection of Jesus, if there's some problem that is so overwhelming and you need help moving that stone and you want prayers and encouragement of the body of believers here, we want to give you that opportunity this morning as together we stand and sing.